Hello and welcome to Talking.Golf on Wisconsin.Golf. Talking.Golf is a weekly podcast featuring Gary D'Amato and Rob Hernandez. And now, talking all things golf in Wisconsin, here's Gary and Rob. Talking.Golf is sponsored by Old Fashioned Golf. Our friends at Old Fashioned Golf are creating Wisconsin-inspired golf apparel right in Green Bay, Wisconsin. All of their gear is extremely comfortable, with one-of-a-kind designs that allow you to show your love for this great state, both on and off the course. And take it from me, Rob Hernandez and Gary D'Amato, when we wear our old-fashioned golf polos on the golf course or out to dinner, no one has to ask us where we're from or where we like playing our golf. It's all about Wisconsin at Old Fashioned Golf. So check them out at oldfashionedgolf.com. And as I welcome in Gary D'Amato, this is Rob Hernandez. I do have to say, Gary, these old-fashioned golf polos are outstanding, and I wore the red one with the white Wisconsin logo outline and the flag coming out of, I don't know what, Beloit, Janesville, to bocce ball the other night. And
nice.
I was styling. I will say this, though. A good-looking polo does not make you a better bocce player.
Well, you know, Rob, this coming Thursday, I'm playing in the 28th annual Wisconsin-Illinois Writers Cup, which you played in many years ago, maybe. You haven't played in that in a while, I know, since you moved, at least, right?
Right, yeah. And it got rescheduled?
It got rescheduled. Yeah, it was supposed to be last week, and they moved it to this coming Thursday. And I'll be styling my Wisconsin gear from Old Fashioned Golf, too, so that's going to be cool.
So the red and white didn't work last week. The next time I roll, I'm going to wear the new green with the yellow. So it's the, what would that be? The hunter green with the yellow outline of the state of Wisconsin and the flag and the Packer colors. Maybe that'll work. I don't know. It's right now kind of hard to cling to a Wisconsin sports team that is emitting good vibes to carry over to something like bocce ball. But I will say this. I mean, what I like best about those polos is, they do kind of stretch a little bit for those of us who tend to fill out a polo.
Yeah. Well, at least, we can fly the Packer colors this week because they're not playing, Rob. So they've got to buy. So, fly that green and yellow for one more week, at least.
As someone down here in Arizona told me yesterday, a Wisconsin native, the Packers can't lose this weekend. So that's good.
Right. That's good. Right.
Well, I'll tell you what, we can stake our hopes to someone who comes through with breaking news as we record our podcast on a Sunday this week. We were kind of waiting for PGA Tour qualifying school to end on Friday, and it got kind of late in the day, and neither Gary nor I could wait that late. And so we said, well, let's do it Sunday. And lo and behold, Q School gets upstaged by Mario Tiziani down at the SAS Championship this weekend in Cary, North Carolina. Mario with an exceptional career-tying best round of 65 in the final round, and he finishes tied for third at 11 under par, and he finishes four shots behind winner Rod Pampling, Stephen Elker, second place, the Charles Schwab Cup overall champion last year, finishes with a 13 under par 203. And then Mario, 70, 70, 65. But Gary D'Amato, Mario, in addition to shooting 431 on the front, finishes birdie, birdie, birdie to shoot that 65. And the T3 beats, I believe it was a Sanford International finish, or was it a finish early? No, it was the finish out that I covered out in Palm Springs at the Galleria Classic, where he finished T5. So this is Mario's best showing in his 2.5 years on the PGA Tour Champions. Pretty cool for Madison's very own.
It is, Rob. 7 birdies, no bogeys in that 65 low round of the day, low final round in this championship. I'm scrolling down the scores and I don't see anything lower. And this was important for Mario's future on this tour, wasn't it?
It sure was. A lot of things in play here. Obviously the playoffs, I believe it's the top 70 get into next week's opener, the Dominion Energy's Charity Classic, and then I think it's top 40 in the second one, and top 30 come to Phoenix for the Charles Schwab Cup Championship. But more importantly, it's the top 54 on the final money list get full exempt status for next year. That's kind of, if you're familiar with the PGA Tour, that's the senior circuits version of the top 125 back in the day. And Mario's had to go back to the final stage of PGA Tour Champions Q School last year after finishing in, you know, making the first stage of the playoffs, but not finishing in that top 54. And so now, you know, if he continues to play well and nobody behind him, you know, gets on a roll, he should be able to bypass the TPC Scottsdale in December to strengthen his status. At the least, you know, this year he got in a number of events based on his priority status by being just outside the top 54 last year. But this has to be a huge, huge relief for Mario, especially going into the playoffs.
Yeah, it's really hard to overstate how important this was. And to come through with such clutch performance near the end of the season, he moved up 17 spots today in the final round in the tournament. And to do it, you know, when you have to do it, I mean, that's the mark of a player who has some intestinal fortitude. Mario certainly has that. And we're really happy that that he's made some huge strides this year on the Champions Tour.
And so his score, you know, got him, you know, a better status in the playoffs. Again, I'm going to double check the second, tournament threshold there, but, you know, he finishes T3 with Ernie Els. Ernie Els, Gary, was the only guy who finished after Mario, who did on the final holes, what Mario did. And even that, he birdied, I believe, 18 to get into the T3 position with Mario. Everybody else faded, which tells you something about how well Mario played. Actually, Ernie birdied 17, par 18 to get into the T3 spot. But, you know, I mean, nobody was, you know, I mean, to do that down the stretch and then kind of an interesting grouping for Mario Tiziani. He played with Miguel Angel Jimenez, who has a presence about him. I think if you and I were to go out and play on a Champions Tour with a guy like Miguel Angel Jimenez, there might be an intimidation factor. I mean, he's got this aura about him. He's a very popular figure, and you know, with the cigar and the, you know, and the wine and the ponytail, and then he also played with Mark Calcavecchia, who had a great tournament coming back from some health issues. So it was neat to see Mario be the guy that stuffs it on 18. I mean, it was tap in range for that final birdie, and then turn around, shake hands with Miguel Angel Jimenez and Mark Calcavecchia. I'm sure two guys that. You know, he grew up idolizing early in his career because they had great PGA Tour careers. So, you know, that's pretty impressive. And I can't wait to see, you know, where Mario takes it from here.
Yeah, he beat his playing partners, Miguel Angel Jimenez, by 8 strokes and Calcavecchia by 10. So a lot of people struggled in this final round. I didn't watch any of the telecast, Rob. I don't know if what conditions were like, but it doesn't look like they were easy because the bulk of the scores here were in the low to mid 70s with just, you know, a few guys shooting 68s and 69s, and then Mario's 65 really stood out.
They only got a few holes in yesterday because of heavy rains in the area yesterday, so they played a lot of golf today. Mario did improve his standing coming back out this morning out there in Cary, North Carolina. But he was still, you know, chasing, and, were it not for the solid final round, you know, we wouldn't be talking about, you know, all the opportunities now in front of him. The top 72 golfers, get into the, Dominion Energy Charity Classic. That'll be a 54 hole event next week in, Richmond, Virginia. And then after a week off over Halloween weekend, the tour resumes November 3rd through the 5th down at Boca Raton, Florida for the Timber Tech Championship. That's the top 54 players playing 54 holes. And then it's the top 36. That's the number. The top 36 get into the Charles Schwab Cup Championship November 9th through the 12th in Phoenix. And that'll be a 72-hole event with, as we've talked about before on Talking.Golf, the overall championship is essentially sewn up by Mario Tiziani's brother-in-law, Steve Stricker. And we know Steve's going to play in the finale. And, of course, Jerry Kelly, who I believe, even though having a tough final round today, improved his standing in the Schwab Cup standings. He started the day 8th. He shot 2 over 74 today after opening 67-69, finishes at 6 under for a 19th place finish. So, you know, he might have moved up to 7th according to one projection before a tough stretch late in his round. But at worst, he's eighth, and he's also in the conversation for Phoenix in less than a month now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. And the top 54 play at TimberTech in a few weeks. And is it the top 54 then who also earn their playing privileges next year? Is that the same number?
That is, yeah. So I think okay. That's the magic number, and that's why they go with 54. You know, again, it's, we've talked, about how the qualifying system in the senior tour is very difficult to decipher. It's also very difficult to decipher who gets into fields. I, as I was looking for that 54 number, came across something that said that each week when they fill out the field, it's the top 30 from that 54 that get in, and then they go to the next criteria, and then I think there's a certain point where they go back to the other, 24. But, for sure, I don't know if I've ever seen, guys who were the top 54 from the previous year not get into an event. And, the language there isn't very clear on that, in some parts of the internet. And then what is on the PGA Tour site has a few, weird characters in the lingo. I think they might have cut and pasted it from somewhere. That makes it, I think 54 is a very much a magic number, and it'll allow Mario to play without any sponsors exemptions. I'll say this, played on a sponsors exemption again this week, and for the most part, I think he's made the sponsors feel good about giving him the number of exemptions they have over the course of this season. And, of course, most of those tournaments were absent Steve Stricker. I mean, they kind of have a separate, schedule in terms of what Steve likes to play in and how much versus Mario, who has to play in everything. So, again, hats off. I mean, I don't know, Gary, if we can name a bigger grinder over the course of the last three decades than Mario Tiziani. Played a year on the PGA Tour or so early in his career, gave up the game for a while, but especially in the last 2 years, has really carved out a nice future for himself on the PGA Tour champions.
Yeah, he's fought very hard for this and all the while still keeping his job, his day job as a sports and entertainment agent, which he told me at the AmFam that at some point he'd probably have to make up his mind about which one he wanted to do. And it looks like he'd be leaning toward playing golf, and I don't blame him. I don't know how long he'll continue in that job. Maybe he'll just cut back and continue to help manage Steve's career. But at some point I think he's going to maybe very soon, and I'm speculating here, but he could go, full-time player. And he certainly is playing like one.
He sure is. Among the bubble boys on the senior tour in this championship this week, David Duval played well enough to move up from outside the top 75 into the 71st spot. So he will play next week at the Dominion Energy's Charity Classic. Jim Furyk fell from 71 to 72, so he moves on. Jason Bone fell from 72 to 73, and Gene Stowers 73 to 74. So it looks like they're on the outside looking in. I don't know if they account for people like Steve Stricker, who may or may not play next week in West Virginia or in Virginia to compete or to fill the field. I don't know if it's a set 72 or if it's got to be 72 or better based on the money list. But it was interesting to see, Gary, a few guys come on. David Duval, 68, 69, struggled a little bit today with a 71. I know that Boo Weekly finished 68, 69. I don't think he has to worry about his status because I think as a recently turned 50-year-old, he will get consideration for starts in an exemption category for those first-year players next year. So that's not as big a deal. Nota Begay, the third, had a good start to the tournament but apparently fell back. And actually 72, 73, 79. And I know they were talking on Golf Central that, Nota, kind of realized early and often here in his first year and a half on the tour that, you just can't show up and collect a check. You really have to work for opportunities on this tour. So, it's been a fascinating, last few years since they started the AmFam Championship. Gary, for us to really analyze what it takes to play on the PGA Tour champions. And clearly this is the time of year where that sort of resonates with a lot of people.
Yeah, and I guess the big question now, for Wisconsin golf fans is, does Steve Stricker play in this first playoff event? He has hinted that he might, but he might not. I think he said for sure he's not playing in the second event. And it's very, very likely he'll show up for the final event. I was talking to Andy North last week, Rob. I ran into him at Whistling Straits, which we'll talk about in a little bit. And Andy said, he told Steve, you've got to play in that last event. It's embarrassing if you don't. So I think we'll see Steve for sure in that last event. And maybe hopefully the first one.
The other question regarding Steve Stricker that I wanted to ask you, because I really haven't talked to Steve much about it. You know, I've been among that group that's simply wanting to see him play in Phoenix at the end of the year, selfishly, because it's in our backyard. But Doug Ferguson had a piece this week, Gary, that suggested that we might see more of Steve Stricker on the PGA Tour next year. I was kind of like what the headline said, and now he's had a record year with the seniors. Now he's contemplating the PGA Tour. I believe, if I remember talking to Steve probably 2-3 years ago, he played 1 year with a career money list exemption, and then there's a top 50, and then there might be a top 30 exemption. So I think there's two of them that he can use. I think he's used one of them, you know, will he play on the PGA Tour next year more? What do you think? What would be your position on whether, you know, Steve should continue to ride this wave on the Champions Tour, or, you know, see if he can do what, you know, some think? I mean, my goodness, we had people on social media thinking he should, you know, come off the bench at the Ryder Cup. That's how, you know, much people think of the way he's playing right now.
Yeah, I mean, he certainly has played great. You know, I think – you know, knowing Steve and how competitive he is, I'm sure he's given some thought to, hey, maybe I should try to go back and play a few events on the PGA Tour. I highly doubt whether it would be more than a handful. I mean, I think there are certain courses that he played very well on, you know, TPC Deer Run obviously being one. He's won there three times. He's won at Memorial. He's won on some really good courses, and he's probably tempted to go back there and play in some of those. You know, will we see him regularly on the PGA Tour? I would highly doubt that. But I wouldn't be surprised if he played, you know, 5 or 6 events on the PGA Tour next year based on what you just said, what Doug wrote. And also, Steve loves a challenge. You know, he loves being competitive. He loves competing. And, you know, it wouldn't surprise me at all if he's given quite a bit of thought to, should I maybe play a few events next year on that tour?
And for context, I think maybe the headline writer, even though it was on APnews.com, where, you know, a lot of the AP stories, sit for others that don't see them on newspaper websites, go to look. But it does say Steve plans to ask for an exemption to the Sony Open the week before the PGA Tour Champions event on the Big Island. And, you know, that's something Jerry Kelly has done, getting that before the Mitsubishi Electric Championship at Hawaii, which is kind of a winner's only event. I mean, you know, Steve's won so much, it may be a foursome for that event. I know there's other exemption categories, fortunately, that expand the field. But so that makes sense. And then Doug points out that he's already in the Players' Championship for winning the Colleague Company's Championship this year on the senior circuit, and the PGA Championship for winning the senior PGA down in Texas. So, you know, there's 3 starts automatically. I guess, you know, Gary, if you, it goes on to say that, you know, Steve would have to pick the right courses. And I think, you know, I've talked to Jerry Kelly about that. I think there's only a handful of courses, Hawaii being one of them. I thought one of the tournaments down in Texas, you know, was on a course short enough. I think it's the old Byron Nelson, maybe where he would feel comfortable playing. I don't think Steve's lost as much distance. I mean, Jerry's not a long hitter to begin with. And a lot of people make comments that he hits, you know, he's probably one of the shorter guys in the senior tour and does quite well despite that. Steve, though, is not the case. I mean, he's someone that continues to hit the ball a long way. And I think in Doug's story, it quotes Mike Weir as saying, you know, he'd like to see how Steve's short game stacks up right now against the better players on the PGA Tour.
Yeah, Steve is still fairly long. I mean, not by PGA Tour standards anymore. He would certainly not be in the top, you know, 75 distance wise, maybe even not the top 100, but he wouldn't be in the bottom 40. That's for sure. I mean, he would be competitive with his distance, as you said, on the right course. Just, Give enough wedges in his hands and he's going to be fine.
He hasn't played on the PGA Tour since, I believe it was the 21, 3M Open up in the Twin Cities. And since then has played a lot in the PGA Tour Champions, Gary, in events that are 54 holes where if worse came to worse or in pro-ams, you can use a cart. Your week is a lot different on the Champions Tour in your obligations versus the PGA Tour. And at age 56, soon to be 57, I'm sure that's a factor too. Although Steve's kept himself in really good shape, which is one reason why he's able to dominate on the senior tour. A lot of factors, in other words, Gary, to go into whether Steve were to go back and start playing more on the regular tour.
Well, when he gets to Phoenix, Rob, maybe you can feel him out on some of those things.
We'll have to do that. We let him we let him be earlier this week on that topic at the WIA Championship. We'll get to that in a moment. But speaking of the PGA Tour, we've got a number of golfers from the state of Wisconsin competing in the PGA Tour qualifying school. And lo and behold, a number of them got through this week. And starting with Harrison Ott, let me call up my I've got my cheat sheet here.
Harrison Ott was in Lincoln, Nebraska, Rob, at Wilderness Ridge Country Club in Lincoln, along with Barella, Tyler Leach, and Sam Anderson.
All righty. And it was Harrison with rounds of 69, 70, 71, 69. And he finishes T7. Griffin Barella came close, 72, 71, 70, 70. And he finished T26. The top 20 in ties went on. Tyler Leach started great, 69, 68, but then faded with a 77 and finished with a 73. He was T52, and Sam Anderson, 70, 71, 74, 74. As we look at the Lincoln, Nebraska site, Gary, what are your initial impressions about the way things went for the four golfers from the state of Wisconsin? Any surprises in your mind?
No, not really. I expected Harrison not to get through, and I thought the other three guys would have a 50-50 chance. Griffin Barella missed, I think, by two shots advancing. Tyler Leach, as you mentioned, got off to a great start. Little surprised that Sam Anderson didn't play better. We've seen stretches where he's played very, very well, especially on PGA Tour Latino America. So a little bit surprised that we don't see Sam's name a little higher up on the leaderboard. But I did expect and hope that Harrison got through and happy for him that he did.
Yeah, I would agree on Sam Anderson. It'll be interesting to see where he falls in this new, PGA Tour America as a combination of PGA Tour Canada and Latin America. He's obviously quite comfortable with travel that other mini tour professionals from Wisconsin are not, and made the most of it last year, south of the border. We'll see if he can parcel together a pretty solid schedule for 2024 based on status that way. It'll be hard though, because, with this new PGA Tour qualifying school, you get to the final stage and every stage along the way gets you higher up in that hierarchy. So we'll have to see how it plays out for these guys who missed the cut. But I agree, Harrison Ott, is not, I think this Q school, environment is right up his alley after spending 4 years at Vanderbilt, just trying to get a spot in the lineup. Champions Gate, Florida was the site of another, first stage qualifier. Hunter Eichhorn, with a great, final round 68. I believe he was something like seven under, over his last, 13 holes after, I believe it was like a bogey start, down there at Champions Gate. 69, 69, 67, 68. Went from almost being on the bubble, midway through the front nine to, finishing third. At 15 under, the winner there was Michael Sweeney of Port St. Lucie, Florida at 18 under. His week included a round of 63 in the second round and a 64 in the final round. So if you're a young golfer trying to plan your future, you might want to plan to break 65 a few times along the way before you throw money down on a PGA Tour qualifying school. Austin Kanzorski, 73, 73, 73, and then a great 66 in the final round. Shot up about 40 spots into a T41 finish. Just not enough to get inside that top 20 or so to get onto the second stage. Hunter Eichhorn hasn't played a lot on the PGA Tour developmental tours this year. He's worked on his game a lot, played in state opens and things like that. you've followed him a long, long time, Gary. Is this the year for Hunter Eichhorn?
It could be, Rob. You know, Hunter, the great thing that he has going for him is he has the ability to take it very, very deep. He's not afraid to make birdies. A lot of times, I think in qualifying events like this, guys get conservative when they get a couple under. They don't want to give one or two back, and they end up doing that. I think in Hunter's case, when he gets two or three or four under, he wants to keep going, and we've seen that with him over the years. 15 under, 273 total, every round in the 60s. This is sort of what we expect out of Hunter.
It sure is. And, I, you know, again, that final round, you know, these things happen, you know, from one end of the country to the other. And as we're monitoring, you know, we're doing different things during the day. But when I was checking his scorecard early in the day, it was actually a bogey on number one and then bogeys at four and five. And it was the top 20 in ties there as well that went on. And I believe it dropped him one ahead of the cut line at that point. He birdies six, birdies nine to make the turn in 37. And then goes birdie par eagle on a par four. I'm not sure how long that was if he drove a green, but and then birdied 16 and 17 to kind of salt it away. And you know, again, much like we looked at Mario's score today on the senior tour, you know, his 68 was pretty good. The 64 by Sweeney in the final round, the 66 by Kinczorski, I think was actually the second lowest round of the day. And then you have a couple of 67s before. Hunter 68, but four rounds in the 60s in a Q school event, you know, and, you know, he hasn't played in a lot of these. I think this is the second time through, you know, that it speaks well for him. And now onto the second stage, along with Thomas Longbella, who, down at Muskogee, Oklahoma, shot rounds at 70, 66, 69, 71, and he finished T12, top 20 in ties there, went on as well. Luis Gerardo Garza of Guanajuato, Mexico, with a 69, 68, 63, 70, 10 under 270 is the medalist there. So, Thomas only finishing six shots back. Another guy coming out of the University of Minnesota who, when you play for the Gophers, they've got a long line of, guys who are playing on the PGA Tour right now, including Eric Van Rooyen. And, you know, it just seems like Thomas, another one, not afraid to go low. Not afraid, you know, after a tough opening round 70, to go low when he has to. You know, he's been very good at follow-up rounds, and he's another one that's off to the second stage.
Yeah, Thomas is another guy who's got all the gifts physically. We saw it when he won the State Am at Milwaukee Country Club. Was it 3 years ago? 2 years? 3 years ago.
Yeah.
Yeah, won by 10 shots there, dusted the field, and that was just an omen of what Thomas is capable of. And another guy that doesn't surprise me in the least that he's putting up these kind of numbers and advancing. What, you know, you go to the second stage, Rob, like these three state guys are doing, and we have a couple more guys in first stage qualifiers coming up, but, I'm not familiar with the breakdown in second stage, Rob. What, there's a cut, obviously, and guys go on to the final stage, but what do you get if you don't make the cut versus what you get if you do make the cut next in the next stage?
Yeah, I mean, that's a good question. So we do have Tyler Kozer out in California. He's from Rice Lake. Zach Burry out of Appleton down in, at the qualifier at the University of New Mexico. And Jordan Hahn, the former Badger, will be down in Texas this week at one of the two events yet to be played. Actually, three qualifiers will be played in Texas. That's all this week. There's also another series of five first stage qualifiers next week. So you've got a lot of golfers, you know, these 20s and ties from about, you know, probably 15 first stage sites all converging on three second stage sites down in, Alabama, Florida, and Georgia in, the middle part of November. And then it's usually the top 15 to 20 in ties that get to go on. And actually there's five sites. There's another one. Another two second stage qualifiers, the first, last week in November, spilling into December 1st, one in California and a second one in Georgia. So five second stage sites, probably about 20 in ties going on at the final stage. And that tends to be right now where, all the Q school stuff is going to be determined, at least the stuff that's going to get you consistent starts. And, you know, that's why we haven't had anybody really get through to the first stage. I think Zach Burry might have done it 2 years ago and he was the only one. You know, last year it was a pretty lean year for Wisconsin golfers. So you know, it is definitely a one stage at a time type of thing. But boy, you get to that final stage, especially this year with, I believe it's 30 PGA Tour qualifying berths. Now that they've renamed it the qualifying school again for the PGA Tour, you know, there's a lot of opportunity there to get your, you know, punch your ticket to different places in that PGA Tour hierarchy.
Yeah, I think the second stage, Rob, is I would sort of equate it to the conference finals in the NFL, where, you know, there's so much pressure to get to the Super Bowl that once you get to the Super Bowl, I mean, you still want to win the Super Bowl, obviously, but the great pressure is off because you've made it there. And I think the same can be said for the second stage. I think this is the big stage where guys really want to get through to that final stage.
And I know that there's there is some incentive for top finishes. There's incentive for victories, you know, at the second stage. Again, this is kind of the you know, this is somewhat new in terms of the format. You know, the medalists and ties from each first stage site are exempt through the Latin America swing of the PGA Tour America season in 2024. That's something new. The medalists and ties from each second stage site will earn Korn Ferry Tour membership, and provided they do not improve their status at the final stage, will be subject to the second reshuffle. I believe if you get to the final stage and finish 31 through 50 or 60, you're exempt through the third reshuffle. Let me see here. I mean, there's just a lot that's there for people who, you know, win medalists and those who tie for medalists. I don't think there's anything, you know, for people who fare, you know, 5 through 10 or, you know, 2 through 10 on those second stages. And then everything, you know, really boils down to the final stage. Top 5 finishers and ties at the final stage will, earn PGA Tour cards. So that's less than I thought. That's only 5. Next 40, finishers and ties at the final stage exempt through multiple reshuffles of the Korn Ferry season. And all remaining finishers at the final stage will have Korn Ferry Tour membership, as well as being exempt, through the Latin America swing of the 2024 PGA Tour Americas. Now, you know, again, Gary, there's the, you know, we've talked to these guys who have been on the PGA Tour developmental tours, and there is some reluctance to go down south, you know, Latin America. It's not easy to get to, you know, it sometimes can be daunting to, you know, book hotels, order food, whatever it might be, versus Canada. But now there's incentive to do that, because if you start, you know, building your resume in Latin America, it goes directly into the back end of the summer up in Canada. And then the top finishers in Canada, as we saw with George Kneiser getting through to the second stage without having to go to the first stage by his PGA Tour Canada status, allows you to get places that you might have otherwise have to work harder for.
Is George our only state qualifier who went straight to the second stage? Everyone else had to earn their way there, right?
From what I can tell. Some of these late first stage ones haven't divulged their fields yet. I keep looking for, but have not seen Jordan Niebrugge, in any of these. And so I'm wondering if that injury that kept him out of the state open is going to keep him from, making a run at it this year. We haven't really checked in with him recently. Other than that, I think we've seen pretty much everybody else. Emmett Herb out of Middleton, tried to qualify, who got through the pre-qual in Illinois, was derailed at the first stage of Q school this past week in Arizona. But, otherwise, you know, everybody else we've talked to, I don't know if there's anybody else that we're, really missing. I know when I reached out to Kaylor Steger, he said he's going to focus on the DP World Tour qualifying school. So we won't see him in the PGA Tour qualifying process. But, you know, gosh, we've got about what, a dozen Wisconsin guys that are trying to do this, Gary. It's pretty impressive.
Yeah, it is. And, you know, we've got 3 guys as of right now going through the second stage, plus George Kneiser. So a minimum of 4 guys in the second stage, depending on what Zach Burry and the others do in those final first stage qualifiers. So we'll definitely have some people to follow in the coming weeks, Rob.
We sure will. And then, of course, you know, next summer we anticipate Pearson Hunt, a senior at Illinois, turning professional. He's had a tough fall. At Illinois, has been in and out of the 5-player lineup, for Mike Small's Fighting Illini, but, and which means if you're struggling to get into the lineup, you're not very high in the PGA Tour University rankings, which also provide some status for next year too. But, that can turn around in a hurry. And, so much of that is weighted on the second half of the college golf season, which begins in late February. We'll talk about college golf in a little bit, but, both Gary and I were, also at, the WIAA State Girls Golf Championships this last week. And, Wanakee's Izzy Stricker, becomes the 10th golfer in tournament history to repeat as a champion in that event at the Division I level. That was the good news. The bad news is her team finished second by three shots, to Divine Savior Holy Angels out of, Milwaukee. Gary D, you walked with, the Strickers, in that, opening round on Monday at University Ridge. What was your takeaway on the way Izzy, approached, what she was doing? And, I know you watched from afar on Tuesday, but, I think everybody felt terrible for Izzy Stricker. A tough finish, bogeyed her final three holes, and then the team finishes two back. High school golf, college golf, you oftentimes get put in those positions of having mixed emotions based on your finish. I mean, I don't know of another person on the planet that wouldn't be happy over being a back-to-back state high school champion, but Wanakee was so close to making it a double for Izzy Stricker.
Yeah, that was really bittersweet for Izzy and Wanakee, Rob. I walked with her, as you said, for those 18 holes, spent some time talking to Steve, a little bit to Nikki. And, you know, it's amazing how, you know, by now Izzy is, as I wrote about, by now she's very much used to the pressure of being a Stricker, of having that name, being in the spotlight of expectations and the pressure that go along with that name. And she handles it very well. And, you know, I thought, you know, throughout the state tournament, she handled it well. I'm sure she's more disappointed than anyone in the world about the way she finished, but I think she can hold her head high because, she kept Wanakee in there and she won the, as you said, she repeated as a state individual champion. So, kudos for that. It can't be easy, for anybody to repeat. So the pressure was squarely on her shoulders and I thought she handled it very well.
And, you know, I talked to Paul Miller, the Wanakee coach afterwards, and, you know, he pointed out a couple things. You know, first of all, Izzy played phenomenal golf over the middle part of her round there, that final round. Birdied number eight and then opened birdie on the back nine. At that point, she had pretty much put to rest the individual honors, but that team was still fighting. I mean, it was a three-team race between Divine Savior, Holy Angels, with Social Central, the two-time defending champion, and Wanakee going to the back nine. And at various times, Wanakee with Social Central, Divine Savior, were, you know, a number of shots from the top. And at one point, I remember looking at the leaderboard and looking at Izzy's scorecard and saying, boy, she's single-handedly keeping them in there. In hindsight, as Paul pointed out, their number four golfer, Caroline Cotrano, improved 12 shots from the first round to the second. Opened with a 98, shot 86 in the final round. And Gary, she finished par birdie on one of the toughest stretches of the golf course in that second round to even get Wanakee in that conversation. Now, a couple other golfers ahead of her in the lineup, Jordan Shipshock and Georgia Volley, shot 79 and 80 respectively, good scores. They also, you know, had their, bumps down the stretch, and then it kind of puts it in Izzy's hands. And I think Izzy has gotten to the point, Gary, and you probably saw this on day one, team comes first over individual. And she believes that, even though she's still what I would consider to be maybe a slight of build, she's not, you know, 6 foot, and basically like a basketball post player. She's willing to take a team on her shoulders and she almost carried, Wanakee to its first state title since 2010.
Yeah. And she's pretty long, Rob. She probably hits it, I'm going to say 240 to 245 when she hits a good one off the tee. And she was as long as Kylie Walker, who is an outstanding player for Wisconsin Central, because I got to watch her play alongside Izzy. And Kylie bombs it, and Izzy was right with her off the tee. They had on one of the par fives, they had nine irons or wedges into the green for their second shot. So Izzy's not short by any stretch of the imagination. And as I was walking a little bit with Todd Orline, the Wisconsin women's coach, who Izzy is committed to Wisconsin, and he's going to be really happy to get her. And he said she's just going to keep getting better and better.
Yeah, I think she's got an opportunity to walk right in, compete for the top spot in the Badger lineup just based on how badly she wants it. You know, she watched Bobby go through the process at UW, really going from a walk-on to, you know, being that number one player her senior year. And I think she knows the way to get there sooner. And at the same time, you can't underscore in this the role that other teams played in creating the competitive atmosphere we saw. You know, Divine Savior Holy Angels got an incredible performance down the stretch from their senior, Kate Krieger. She hits the 16th green in two, and two putts from about 54 feet for a birdie, and that, you know, was huge. She got up and down from just left of the green on 17 for par, and then hit an incredible shot to about 10, 12 feet on 18 over a ridge. The pin was back, I would say back right, and I had to get it over the ridge, did, and had a putt for birdie, made that to, you know, account for the margin. She pars that. It's a one-shot, you know, margin. And then you're really doing playing the what-if game. You know, Westosha Central was great in their defense of their title. Brookfield East got tremendous performances from their top two golfers, Madison Haugen and Peyton Haugen. Peyton finished second after leading, co-leading this year for the second year in a row after one round. And then Madison Haugen finished eighth. It was, you know, up and down, Division I, Division II. So you had two shots separating the teams in Division I. You had two shots separating Izzy Stricker from Peyton Haugen in the individual competition there. You drop down in Division II. Bell Conshog of Colfax Elk Mound wins by one shot over Ava Pache and Peyton Schmidt. Pache from Somerset, Schmidt from Jefferson, with Alyssa Helminen, another shot back. So one shot dividing the individuals there. And in the team race, Prescott rallies past Green Bay Notre Dame for their fourth title in a row. Green Bay Notre Dame played an exceptional front nine and just faded a little bit down the stretch, finishes three shots back. Gary, I went back and looked, and I'll write about it at some point because we have something called competitive equity coming up that might change the entire landscape of not only girls golf, but every sport in the WIAA programming. But we've never had that many races that closely contested in the same year. Pretty good year for girls golf.
Yeah, I know, Rob. I'm sure that final day when you were there alone writing, I'm sure that was pretty crazy trying to keep up with everything and how the tide turned, when how leaders went up and down the leaderboard, teams went up and down the leaderboard. But I wanted to ask you if it was a bigger surprise to you that DSHA won the Division I title, or a bigger surprise that Westosha Central, which pretty much has been kicking everyone's butts all year, finished third in their attempt to for a three-peat.
Well, I think a 316 on the second day of state was probably, you know, akin to shooting 299 during a regular season event. They played this one at 5,200 yards. They got, you know, Ava Roche, who's again another daughter of a prominent teaching professional in the state, David Roche, final round 75. I think she's just a sophomore. Zoe Grinowitz with an 80 in the final round. She's just a freshman. And then the one that really stood out was Hannah Strakota. She's a junior, and she'll come back next year, Gary. And before the round, Dave Him, the coach at DSHA, was saying that, you know, Hannah might have to battle for the fifth spot next year because Ava Roche's sister's coming in and Kate Krieger's sister's coming in next year as freshmen with a lot of competitive experience behind them. And, you know, they should, you know, fill spots, you know, in and among Ava Roche, Zoe Grinowitz, and Hannah Strakota. But there's other people in the DSHA program that are, you know, coming up pretty good. And here, and then, you know, Hannah Strakota goes out and shoots even par on the front nine and gets them in position to win the state title. I thought that was one of the great stories. She stumbled on 11 with a nine, but comes back with a birdie, shoots 81, a phenomenal round by a young lady who is, you know, a number four golfer that doesn't get any attention up to that point. And yeah. I think she was as big a deal in that state title as Kate Krieger was. And the best part, if you're DSHA, is you've kind of, you know, you've raised the bar. They've never won a state title, and you've shown the kids coming after you how you do it. And you do it by, you know, not giving up. They shot 325 on the first day. And they were, you know, tied with Wanakee, one shot behind Westosha. Westosha didn't get great rounds late in the year from a few golfers, but, you know, they also, you know, made, they were the people with the targets on their back. And Mark Olson, their coach, you know, talked about that. There was no secret who everybody was chasing, Gary, going up to and including the state championship. And even after the first day when Wasosha held the lead. I don't think it was a surprise. DSHA was one of the teams that was there, but you know, this was by far their biggest, you know, this is a crowning achievement for a program that hadn't been, hoisting the gold trophy in, you know, in their program's history. And they've had some pretty good teams over the course of time.
Well, what really struck me, Rob, was, I was only there the first day, got there just in time for Izzy's tea time, which it turned out was moved back a little bit, 10:20 a.m. I think she wound up teeing off around 10:45 or so. But when I got there, I couldn't find a parking place, Rob. There, I couldn't believe the turnout for the state high school girls championship. It was unbelievable how many people were there.
And at $9 a pop, Gary, buy your tickets in advance. You know, it's very much a culture shift. It's only the second year, I believe, that they've done that at University Ridge. And you're right. I mean, you know, the number of people that made the trip down from Prescott, you know, and, you know, just looking at, and then the green on 18, that final round with Kate Krieger, Izzy Stricker. I believe it was Vivian Cressman. No, they were in that second to last wave. But, you know, they were 2 and 3 deep along that side. And it was, you know, Kylie Walker and it was Madison Haugen, from Brookfield East. And, you know, and with so much on the line, I mean, everyone was there with holding their breath to find out what was going to be the final outcome. That was as big a crowd as I've seen, boys or girls, in, you know, at 18. And there's something about University Ridge. I don't see, you know, I really honestly, there's a number of people that have made the trip over to Kohler. And Kohler has been a wonderful fill-in host for the boys tournament while we figure out, you know, when, in, you know, the WIA and how many teams will get back to University Ridge, presumably when they return there in 2025. But, you know, there's just something about University Ridge. It's such a good state championship course. And I've been to Fox Hills and Mishicot back in the day when the boys played there. Not a good site. Lake Arrowhead in Nakusa, wonderful state tournament venue, kind of hard to get to. University Ridge, whatever it is, whether it's basketball, football, you know, when the state tournaments that are held in Madison, they get tremendous attendances because people know how to get to Madison. It's really an interesting phenomena. And, you know, you and I cover a lot of tournaments over the course of a year. When's the last time you've seen a state open with that many people, you know, walking along?
Yeah, it's been a long time. I don't know that I ever have, actually, Rob. It was a big turnout, and I would like to know the attendance numbers. Did you ever find out what the attendance was? Does the WIA talk about that or release that number? Because I'd like to know.
They don't immediately after it, but I think it's contained in the, you know, once they kind of,
you know, report
the books and file the report. We will look for that and make a request to Todd Clark for that information. Because again, it's only the second year they've had ticket numbers to, you know, kind of count how many people actually walk in. Before that, you know, it was, you know, free and open to the public.
Yeah.
You just find a parking spot and find a point of entry and you can get in. And now they just kind of check things as you're driving up the drive there to University Ridge Clubhouse. And it was, you're right. It was spectacular, how many people were there, those 2 days. So, again, you know, another, tournament, in the books. And now Gary, we're down to our last week of college golf and, we've got, the Badger men, the Badger women, and I believe the Green Bay women all competing either today and tomorrow or Monday and Tuesday. Marquette men are also in action. And looking at the Badger women, they're down at a tournament in Knoxville, Tennessee, the Mercedes-Benz Intercollegiate. Got off to a great start. They started on the back nine and counted a 34, a 36, a 37, and one of two 38s, but the 34 from Carly Carter was exceptional. Carly brought it in 71, but Wisconsin kind of tumbled a little bit down the leaderboard, finished 12th out of 14 teams. The Badgers are just ahead of Chattanooga with Sarah Busey as their assistant coach, and she's out of Racine. And they had to count a 40 on the back nine, the 37 from Carly Carter, 37 from Chloe Chan, Alexia Seal, a sophomore out of South Carolina, improved one shot from the back to the front with a 36. So, 295. Leading the way is Central Florida at 271. But I think that, you know, we saw Kate Brody, who was playing really well for most of the day, finished bogey, bogey, double. Alexia Seal finished bogey, bogey. It feels like it's been the theme for our Division I schools here this year, where they show great flashes of promise and then have trouble closing out rounds.
Yeah, I mean, you look at but you look at the scores, they're a little deceiving when you see Wisconsin in 12th place out of 14 teams, but they finished at 11 over, one stroke behind Kent State, but only eight shots out of a tie for fourth. So eight shots is not a whole bunch in a college golf when you're playing five and counting four. So, you know, I'm sure, you know, Todd and the women would have liked to finish a little higher, but score wise, it wasn't disastrous. That's for sure.
So I think if you're Todd Erline, you're looking for, you know, you're looking to make that move to, you know, if you're, you know, in 12th down, only that, you know, that close to fourth, what can you do to get to fourth? Each individual golfer, yeah, what can you do to get there? Not only for this week, but, you know, to kind of go into the winter, you know, season, the off season on a positive note. You know, it kind of makes the idea of working hard for the spring season, the conference championship season, you know, I think more palatable, doesn't it?
It does. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. It's the fall season is very important, but it's the spring season that is ultra important when you get down to conference championships and trying to make it to the NCAA championship. So yeah, Todd, I'm sure, is working out his lineup, and you know, we'll see what the winter holds. Most of these girls and guys get away and play somewhere. I know a couple of guys on the Wisconsin men's team definitely get away and play. And so we'll see what happens when they come back in February and March.
The men are at the Fallen Oak Collegiate Invitational, the Badger men, that is, in Saucier, Mississippi. Did I say that right? I'm not sure.
I think so. Close enough.
Okay. 302 today in the opening round, led by Cameron Huss's one under par 71. And I believe the Badgers also, the men started on the backside, started a little bit slow, but Cameron came on with a 333 on the back nine to shoot his 71. He's at T12. Jacob Beckman, the next Badger in line with a 74. He's T32. He had three bogeys in the first four holes and then turned it around and played the final stretch in one under. I know when I saw Mike Wilson out at U Ridge last week during the girls tournament, he was very excited about James Boosted, a freshman from, I believe, South Africa, entering the lineup, and a little bit of a roller coaster round. I'm seeing a triple bogey on his outward nine, an eagle on his inward nine, and a lot of colorful numbers in between. Pretty typical of a freshman playing his first collegiate meet in the lineup.
Yeah, you know, they got good scores from Cameron and Jacob, but I'm sure the whole team is disappointed that they had a count of 78, looks like a 78 and 79, right?
Yeah.
So, yeah, you would expect more from this lineup and more from these players. I'm sure Mike does, and I'm sure the players do. They've been a little disappointing this fall, Rob, I would say.
Yeah, and you know, for the second year in a row, you know, some new parts in the system. Blake Wisdom came in as a grad transfer. There were several of those in the lineup last year in Mike's first year, and I think, you know, Blake is still trying to make the transition from you know, from Bucknell to Wisconsin. We know, you know, from seeing him in the summertime, that he is a guy that has the potential to go low. I don't think Coulter Smith has played quite as well this fall as he did, especially last spring. And I think it's a guy that you can look to maybe, you know, improve and be a cog in the lineup. But that fifth spot, Gary, I think is going to be wide open till the end of the year.
Yeah, I agree. Graham Moody, you know, he has played very, very well in some stretches during his time at Wisconsin. Played as an individual in this tournament and had a bunch of double bogeys. It's a little puzzling. I don't know if he's going through a swing change, or I'm not sure what's up with Graham, but maybe I think he's possibly had an injury too. But anyway, those are names that we've come to expect and see with better scores than what they're posting.
The Marquette men will play at the Dayton Flyer Invitational at NCR Country Club in Kettering, Ohio on Monday and Tuesday. And the Golden Eagle lineup will consist of Max Lyons, Boom Sima Aree, Josh Robinson, Aiden Lafferty, and Patrick Adler. Ryan Bannis and Mason Schmidtke, two freshmen, will go along as individuals. Same story there, Gary. I think they've played pretty solid throughout the fall. I know that, you know, Steve Bailey's looking for a, you know, good solid finish to go into the winter with, but you know, this is a lineup that has a lot of potential. I know expectations every year are to win the Big East and get into the regional, but, you know, I think they need to get, you know, kind of, you know, a good taste in their mouth, in Ohio this week to, round out the fall season.
Yeah, they certainly have a lot of experience with, I believe, three grad students in the lineup. And then, you know, I'm sure Steve Bealey, Coach Bealey, is looking to some of those younger guys to come on strong and fill out those three, four, and five positions.
So that's the way it looks in college golf. Also, since we talked last, UW Whitewater winning a seventh consecutive WIAC championship last week at Reedsburg Country Club, and Abby Filipiak getting the individual honors out of UW Stout. And this year, the finishes at the conference championship determined all conference and player of the year. Abby Filipiak, the player of the year. Andrea Wieland, the coach of the year. And Haley Thoney out of UW Lacrosse, the newcomer of the year. Gary, in that tournament, there were a number of individual competitors that won all conference honors. And which, again, I think it speaks to the depth in Division III women's golf that now all of a sudden, within each program, Stout, Whitewater, and Lacrosse all had a golfer that finished in the top 10 to 15 and would have been counters in a big way in that lineup, but wound up just competing for themselves this year, or at least this fall. And I think it was Haley Myers out of Whitewater with a 72 or 73 in the final round. It got her into the top 10 individually and got her some all-conference recognition. And Liz Roll out of Prescott for UW Stout the same way. I mean, that's silly, isn't it? I mean, I saw Darren Skinner was at the state high school tournament because his daughter was there. And I gave him the business about, you know, I hope, you know, I said, you know, did your daughter have an Eau Claire B-team performance? Because we've been talking about it. The B-team keeps beating the A-team, and he knows exactly that's happening. And he said it's a good problem to have, but now it's a matter of trying to find the right combinations, both Eau Claire men and Whitewater women, in Florida this week at a golf week tournament with all the national powers. So you hope that both Andrea Wieland at Whitewater and Darren Skinner with the Eau Claire men have pushed the right buttons, because this is a big rankings week for those schools.
It is, Rob, and I was following your coverage from afar, actually on Saturday, which was, that would have been the second round of the WIAC women, right? So I was ironically at the UW Whitewater, UW Lacrosse football game in Whitewater, Rob. And I got to say, this has nothing to do with golf, but it was one of the best college football games I've seen in a long time. Whitewater's down two touchdowns in the fourth quarter. They tie it up, and Lacrosse wins on a 51-yard field goal on the last play of the game.
And 20,000 of your friends were there too, Gary.
Yeah. It was a huge crowd, the biggest crowd in WIAC history, certainly in Whitewater history, 20,300 and some, I think. A huge crowd and a great football game. But I was following the scores from afar, Rob, and reading your fine reporting.
Well, and I think what you saw in football and what I saw in golf, I've kind of beaten this drum for a long time. The experience you get at the Division III level in any sport in the state of Wisconsin is second to none. And yeah. And while women's golf hasn't quite gotten to the level of Whitewater football or any number of the various men's and women's basketball teams that have really made an impression on the national scene, they're getting close. And you know, that's why I was hoping that, you know, maybe Whitewater would go down to Destin, Florida, and be able to, you know, start that process. You know, they've now qualified for the NCAA Division III championships next spring in at Keene Trace in Kentucky. So we'll see. I mean, it's just, I feel it's a matter of time. The talent that's being developed here in Wisconsin just gets better and better, and it continues to find its way to the WIAC schools. So I'm not sure we'll see 20,000 at a WIAC golf championship, but you know, we hopefully, if, you know, maybe WIA levels someday. Gary, before we close out talking.golf, we've got a big sweet spot column coming tomorrow, and led off by an event that you were able to attend this week over at Whistling Straits in Haven, Wisconsin, the 25th anniversary of Whistling Straits. Who's who of people were there? And I think the biggest thing is that it's been 25 years since Whistling Straits debuted on our scene and really changed the complexion of destination golf because of all the events, PGA Championships, Ryder Cup, U.S. Senior Open, that have been there since it opened.
Absolutely, Rob. And it spurred, you know, a lot of golf course, a building boom of golf courses in our state from the Bog to Erin Hills to what's happening at Sand Valley. I think there's some great competition for Kohler now. We're going to see how they respond in the years going forward. Certainly the first 25 years of Whistling Straits have just been phenomenal with the championships. And the fact, as you mentioned, that they put Wisconsin on the map for destination golf. It was a cool 2-day event, Rob. I was really honored to receive an invitation from David Kohler. And, boy, I was at the opening cocktail party, Rob. I turned around and in walks Fred Ridley, the chairman of Augusta National in the Masters tournament. And then I turned the other direction. There's Peter Dawson, the former CEO of the RNA, and spent time chatting with Andy North and Bob Volke, the wedge designer for Titleist. I mean, it was some heavy hitters. Seth Waugh, CEO of the PGA of America, some heavy hitters there. It was a great 2 days. I had a great time. We got to play. I played Whistling Straits with Mike O'Reilly and Joe Stadler, Rob, which was a blast. And yeah, I write about that in the lead item in Sweet Spot that'll come out Monday morning.
So take a look at that. Shout out to the folks at Whistling Straits and what they've done. And also in the Sweet Spot tomorrow, we pay tribute to a giant in central Wisconsin as far as TV news, Mark Zelich, who for decades was the sports director and news director at WSAW-TV in Wausau. And it launched a lot of careers, including our, I don't want to say launched Jocko's career. I think Jocko was somewhere else before he went to Wausau, but yeah, like Jocks at Channel 15 in Madison. But, you know, if you go on the internet and watch some of the tributes to Mark, you know, Joy, I think it's Joyce Garbasiak in the Milwaukee market, Susan Simon in Madison, Mike Goucher from the Milwaukee market. I mean, just who's who. He's got a scrapbook, and it's just Bill Jartz, who's in Green Bay. I believe he's also the PA announcer for the Packers. You know, the guy had a legacy, but as it relates to golf, he started something called the Channel 7 Invitational back in 1961. And when I was growing up, all the good golfers at Bullseye Country Club in Wisconsin Rapids were either exempt from qualifying or would try to qualify at one of the regional sites to get into this, largely because the last two rounds, Gary, or the two rounds were televised on Channel 7 in Wausau. And it was always the, you know, like I think the 17th green and most of the 18th hole. And Mark would be up there in the booth. And I tell you what, you know, Mark Bumowski, the Hall of Famer, you know, his name is in the record books for the Channel 7 Invitational as a 5-time champion. I don't think I ever asked Mark why somebody who did, you know, spent most of his life in Southeast Wisconsin would go all the way to Central Wisconsin to play in this 2-day event. But other than the fact that a lot of great competition, you had a lot of people that played those courses and knew them like the back of their hand, I'm sure it challenged him. He's kind of the one guy that, you know, came from out of market to play in it. But, you know, it's amazing that the history includes Joe Pavelski as a former champion. Jim Lombardo over at Erin Hills, who I didn't realize was a Wausau native. You know, he won it 1 year. I mean, it's pretty cool. And, Mark passed away at the age of 95 on Thursday, and a lot of tributes pouring in for him. And, you know, it's now been renamed the Mark Zelich Golf Classic. And I believe Channel 7, ended its sponsorship of it about 4 or 5 years ago. And now the, Wisconsin Valley Golf Association, which has got a series of events for golfers in that area, has picked it up as kind of their flagship event. And I'm sure they will continue to pay honor to Mark Zelich. But, I tell you what, Gary, it's, time doesn't stand still, Whistling Straits 25 and we lose Mark Zelich at the age of 95. It seems like just yesterday, both were in the prime of their, you know, Whistling Straits in the infancy and Mark Zelich in the prime of his career, and all these people that helped make Wisconsin golf what it is.
Yeah, I didn't know Mark Zelich, but, you know, reading the item that you contributed, the Sweet Spot, I sure wish I would have met him and gotten to know him somewhere along the way. It sounds like he did some great things for golf up in that north central region of the state, and golf is going to miss him.
And apparently he did Badger football games with Earl Gillespie. I didn't know that either until last week. So you just don't ever know. Gary, so you've got the Ryder's Cup this week or is it next week?
Ryder's Cup is this coming Thursday, Rob, at Itasca Country Club, but down in suburban Chicago. 28th annual Wisconsin versus Illinois media hacks going at it. Should be fun.
You going to get some rounds in before then? Are you going to be, you know, primed and ready to go?
I've got one practice round in coming up tomorrow or Monday for people who listen to this podcast. It's Monday afternoon at Blue Mound with our esteemed colleague, Mike Davis. So,
wow.
Two pretty good rounds of golf lined up this week, Rob.
What a way to potentially close out the 2023 golf season.
Yeah.
Well, we hope there's a few more weeks left beyond that. All I know is I had to buy a jacket when I was back, Gary, so I know that your days are numbered. We're finally we're back in the triple digits for the next 5 days. So we've got a long way to go before we have to start worrying about coats and, you know, that kind of gear down here. I can't wait to hear about the Ryder Cup next week when we get together for Talking Dot Golf.
All right, Rob, I'll let you know all about it.
All right. For Gary D'Amato, this is Rob Hernandez. This has been Talking Dot Golf. And we are sponsored by Old Fashioned Golf. Our friends at Old Fashioned Golf are creating Wisconsin-inspired golf apparel right in Green Bay, Wisconsin. All of their gear is extremely comfortable with one-of-a-kind designs that allow you to show your love for this great state both on and off the course. Take it from me, Rob Hernandez, and Gary D'Amato. When we wear our old-fashioned golf polos on the golf course or out to dinner, no one has to ask us where we're from or where we like to play our golf. In fact, Gary will be sporting the old-fashioned golf polo this Thursday in the Illinois-Wisconsin Ryder Cup down in Illinois. It's all about Wisconsin and old-fashioned golf. So check them out at oldfashionedgolf.com. For Gary, I'm Rob. We'll talk golf again next week.